Hello, welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. My name is Melissa. I am coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hello, everybody. This is Suta Calling Last. I'm coming to you from Missoula, Montana today.
How are you doing, Suta Calling Last?
I'm doing good. I've been a little tired. Some family members have COVID. And so,
oh no.
Yeah, working, doing a little bit of shopping, and then masterminding my grand plan for next year, pretty much.
How have you been? I've been doing really good. I just got back from a podcast convention in Phoenix, Arizona. So I got a taste of that toasty desert weather again. Tad bit warmer over there, and I was really feeling spoiled and came back to Vegas where it's a little bit chillier, but I'm glad to be back. I got a lot of information, and I'm always excited to be recording again because I love podcasting. I really, really do.
So you're good at it. You're good at it too. Everybody who doesn't know, she mixes, masters, edits, is just an amazing sound woman.
I could do that all day, I've realized. And I met a whole group of like women who are in the exact same like work. And it was just super inspiring to meet a lot of people. So I'm going to apply what I learned to our show today. And I thought we should talk about some of the, I guess you could say, quote unquote, privileges of being an Indigenous person, because you and I have a unique experience. I know I definitely do, coming from Canada and exercising the Jay Treaty. Carrying a green card in America was kind of strange. I did pull it out at the convention. I mistook it for my ID, and someone said, "Is that a green card?" And I was like, "Yes, I carry a green card." They're like, "But you're Indigenous." And I was like, "Right?"
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like I mentioned to you before we started recording, like how one of your comments from our last podcast just keeps ringing through my head. And you're like, how lucky are we to be Inak Indians? And I'm like, oh, that's a kind of a gut punch to my sovereignty. But no, that Inak card is like, has several times I've shown it to RCM or not RCMP, but border guards, and they either know about it or they don't. For some reason, it seems like I always get a border guard who's from Newfoundland and Quebec and doesn't even know the tribal nations he's working between or any of the history. And so having that card then is kind of like, he's like, what's that? But it does. It makes us protected by the Jay Treaty, where Canadian natives can come down into the U.S., especially the ones separated by the U.S.-Canadian border, and exercise our right to visiting our communities, our families, obtaining education and work, because it's our historical land and communities. And so that's what the Jay Treaty is for.
And in case you're wondering what INAC stands for, they just changed it to Indigenous in Northern Affairs Canada. For the longest time, it was Indian and Northern Affairs Canada. And the joke was always like, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up and especially having poor vision, a lot of my family members, we'd be like, we're going to go get some INAC glasses from the eye doctor now, or, you know, because that was one of the benefits of being an INAC treaty Indian, is that you could go to the eye doctor and you would have your choice of like specific styled cheap glasses that you could get for free because you are under the INAC. And but they did have like a look to them, you know, like
I still, you could look, tell they were to my INAC glasses.
My mom had hella INAC glasses, and I would tease her and I'd be like, no, I'm going to invest my own money and get contact lenses.
I still get my INAC glasses.
And I should really get some.
Yeah, I've been using the same pair for 7 years. So I wonder if I get back pay. Does that mean I get a $700 pair of glasses this year and I can really get those? What's the cute ones? The Ray-Ban lenses? And
who knows? Maybe the INAC glasses have evolved. It's been like over 15 years since I've seen the actual selections they give people.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how that was funny, about how, you know, we were really celebrating. And at the time it was kind of trauma, tragedy, and then saving graces we were able to get through. And then we celebrated, but we shouldn't have that worry at all. And we shouldn't be celebrating because it should be our right to cross, literally hassle-free. Right? We're just doing business between our there just happens to be
a border.
Yeah.
An invisible line that they created.
Oh, that was so heartbreaking to pull up to the gate that one day and see the padlock on it and then look at the gravel roads going around the padlocked gate. I'm like, my truck can get over that.
Hell yeah.
Like, how far could I make it? Would BIA be called in? There's a rogue Indian running away. We want her to stay.
But it was kind of powerful just to see, or when you told me that the guard was like, I can't stop you.
Yeah.
You're an INAC Indian. Like, they really, I mean, they can hold us up. They can give us a hard time and search, but they at the end of the day, they can't really stop us. Maybe even detain us if they wanted to for a bit. I don't know.
Oh, because we're getting rowdy or something.
Yeah, if they really suspected something was up, but they would just be wasting their time because we have access and they have to let us through.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing in my personal records or anything. And even if there was, you know, I think I know way too many natives who can't go see their family. They got in some kind of trouble on either side of the border. And those things, I guess, supersede status.
Yeah. I heard that you can't cross anymore. Even if you have a DUI on the Canadian side, you won't be able to enter the U.S. I know my father is unable to cross the border. So is my sister and one of my best friends, which is why they've never come to visit me because of a history or a track record with, you know, the criminal side of things.
Same with my family. And, you know, my family's not too bad, but we're not like the criminals that should be kept on one side of a border and out of a country. That's for sure. But I've, like, while I've lived in Canada, I hardly see my brothers and sisters from the U.S. and same, vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, both my mom and dad can still cross, but there's too many families. My cousin hasn't seen her family. She lives in Standoff, which is, you know, capital of my res. She hasn't seen her family in Browning, Montana, which is only 40 miles away south. And both reservations used to be right up to the border, but she hasn't seen her family in 21 years.
What?
Yeah.
That's really crazy. That's like, yeah, a whole generation.
Yeah. They're only 40 miles apart, but she's so terrified of crossing the border and getting that hassle that she doesn't even bother. She's that just terrified.
So sad.
Yeah. She just hopes they come to a powwow. I know. I know.
That's really crazy. It is. I mean, like I said in the past episodes, I'm planning to move back to Canada, and the hassle it's going to be to get my stuff across the border is going to be a lot.
Oh, you just bought a new bed.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I think that they'll try to make me pay duty on stuff. So I'm going to slowly, over a period of 12 months, kind of shuffle a couple boxes here and there over the border with friends and family who come visit and beat them at their own game.
Somehow we got to live indigenously.
Right? I deep down, I don't have like full respect for any of these systems that are put in place, even though I'm, you know, a treaty person and I'm here on the Jay Treaty and I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, it's like, this is all they can give me after everything that they've done. So it's still pretty unbalanced in my
perspective. It's kind of red tape and oppression.
Yeah, really.
Mm-hmm. If we have family members who haven't seen each other in more than 20 years, and every time we cross, there's fear, and we can't regularly move back and forth like our life requires, then it's oppressive.
So lame. So lame.
Yes. Yes.
Well, what would you say are some of your quote unquote indigenous privileges? If someone had to ask you, because I know that there's this huge stereotype that we get all this other stuff for free, but what do we really get?
For free.
Kind of. I mean, I know in Canada, healthcare is free for everybody, but for INAC, you get almost all your prescriptions for free as well. That's kind of a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I don't know. Like, my privileges, I would say, aren't colonial based. I feel like they're more spiritual based and soul based. And I feel like the privilege is being able to walk out on my ancestral lands and feel like I'm home and feel like I'm surrounded by family, which is not a feeling you can actually point at or show people. It's just a feeling that you get. And it feels privileged. I feel privileged walking into the ancestral territory and feeling like it's current home.
I also feel privileged to be on like my home continent and have that connection, you know? And I know I've spoken about this before, that if people who are here and they go back to their original territories on their continents, I wonder if they feel that sense of pride and, you know, connection to their home, quote unquote, lands, as opposed to being here on ours.
Oh, you have to, right? Because we're formed. So. We're formed by the dust and the molecules from the point of our creation, like the area of our creation. Our mothers were getting dust in their mouth and grit between their teeth and swallowing it, and it goes to the womb, and we're formed by that. And I feel like those particles, especially dust and sand particles, are vibrating at a certain frequency that's reflective of where they're found in the earth. And I think when we put our bodies in the place where our genetics were formed, our DNA was formed, then you get you get harmonizing frequencies. And maybe that's what I feel. Maybe that sense of peace and privilege and feeling like I'm already enveloped in a hug by a grandma. Like that's literally that kind of euphoric feeling of the best hug by your granny that you can possibly get after eating a sugar cookie of her best recipe, whatever it is, piece dry meat and berries. I love berries, but whatever it is, that euphoric feeling, maybe that's my molecular body vibrating in the same frequency as the land.
That's beautiful. I think I feel it too. I think I do too.
That's a privilege. So it's not like, yeah, I have a lot of student loans. I can't buy a house. I had to choose between a vehicle or a house this past year. And I'm still renting an insanely expensive apartment. So we don't get housing for free. We don't. On the res, you do a little bit, sort of. But even then, they have you pay rent on the houses through housing that you get. So nothing's mm-hmm. free.
I've never experienced free education. I've seen other people get through their tribal nation or their nations, some of their school paid, but I had to pay off all my student loans, which I did last year after almost 11 years it took me, but I didn't get any free education.
No free education. Oh, I paid. Oh, our organization, a nonprofit Native-led organization, we, I think, will ultimately pay probably around $26,000 in employee taxes. Whoa. To Montana and Arizona. That's a big part of our Indigenous Vision budget is taxes. I feel like I have to write a small grant just to cover those. Where is that grant at? Tax help.
Right? I can't stand taxes. Again, taxes don't feel right. It just doesn't feel right. Like it's not something that makes sense, especially when you zoom out and you look at our lives. It's just a made up BS. It really is.
I feel like things like roads and infrastructure, like plumbing and stuff like that, should be public expenses. But
why rich people need to pay their share too?
Yes. Because right now I think we're on that same European colonial system where there are the lords of the land and the serfs who work it. And the serfs are never out of servitude and always paying taxes to the lords who pay a smaller tax to the king. And I just don't think that class of people is not being taxed to what they could. And they're kind of letting the working people and the poor people pay for it. And I saw like a right wing, and this channel, this station episode is, we're not right or left. We're kind of like what's right and what's wrong, what's just and what's not. But I saw some political commercials blaming each other. Like, did you see what the leftists did? Or they're trying to take all your tax money. But I essentially believe in the public and the commons funding public infrastructure type things that everybody needs. but it's to what extent it really is. Like, if you're making more money, then you pay more. And if you're not making any money, if you're barely getting by, then you don't pay anything.
Exactly. Exactly. And when I first came to America, I was bombarded with, my first tax experience. I owed like over $1,000, and this is working like low paying jobs. And it just blew my mind. And I was immediately exposed to how this cycle of poverty just started. Like, I had just jumped in, started working two jobs to afford my apartment so that I could survive without having to worry about food and bills and phones. And then to get like a ding, 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 you owe almost $1,800 for taxes. I was just like, what? How is that even possible? How do people get ahead in this country?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when municipalities make decisions to fix roads and potholes and upgrade plumbing infrastructure, it's not ever in the zip code that we were living in.
Exactly. I lived on that street on 24th. In Phoenix, that the streetlights were out. There was like a good four in a row, which made it very dark and scary at nighttime. The whole year and a half I lived there. And I thought, don't they care about this part of the street at all?
I bet your $1,800 would pay for at least two of those.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree, though. Tax the people who aren't paying their share, because that is not fair. So
yeah, we're just a small native-led organization. Why are we paying so much? And I mean, we're trying to play by the books, but the books aren't fair.
Exactly. That's why it never felt right to me. I'm like, we're the only ones playing along with their little game while they're like living it up somewhere.
Laughing.
Probably on a private jet to Hawaii.
Yes, laughing about how they don't pay anything, but privileges. No, mostly it's like soul nourishing spiritual things that I feel like is a privilege, because that's where I, money wise, no, education, no, housing, no. I still owe too many student loans to say we get a free education. And then it's always discretionary. Like, so I think in every single treaty might have mentioned hunting access, gathering access, education, all of that. So it's a treaty right. It's the agreements we made as two nations, no matter what indigenous nation you're part of, and the federal governments, Canada or the US, we made treaty agreements to exchange these things to allow settlers to be on the land for their hassle-free. And
we said we wouldn't kill anybody. Mm-hmm. We would be peaceful, maybe even joyful. Not so much.
I think
just so that they could bring their family, bring their family situations down and form the colonies that they so desperately wanted to.
Right, right. And it's, oh my goodness. That's so depressing to think about land title and loss. And I saw one of the, I had an accident and I fell into the comment section.
Oh no!
On a Columbus Day post. And just to check it out, I was like, what is Melissa talking about? And
I was really trying not to go off on Columbus Day. I was really trying not to go off.
Oh,
it's hard. It's,
yeah, there was one comment of why do the Indians want land back when they didn't protect it anyway?
That's what I always hear. It's like we didn't try or something like that, you know, or really snarky. That's, you guys should have tried harder. It's like,
that's what
well,
a treaty is for. And that's, there were quite a few massacres of people trying.
Ooh, that makes me mad. I can barely speak right now.
Yeah, let's change the subject.
But I also wanted to say the privilege, because we're trying to talk about like indigenous quote unquote privilege, and if it's, there's even such a thing. But I used to think I was honestly cursed, Suta, because I was born indigenous. Like I thought, because it felt like the whole world just was messed up, and because I got bullied and, you know, all the racism I experienced. But now that I'm older, I actually am so grateful that I am indigenous, because I see the world and feel the world, especially here, a lot differently than people that I'm constantly surrounded by. And even just being at that convention this past weekend, I was the only Indigenous person. There was Indigenous to Colombia there. There was a couple of other like Latino women, but I was the only Native American woman there. And there was only one land acknowledgement. And I just looked around and I was like, holy moly, I know so much stuff compared to these people. And I just had this like sense of pride, like I'm kind of the only one here. And I felt really good to be that only one and to tell people over and over like who I represented and why I'm here. And they were just like, wow, we have a Native American lady here and she produces podcasts and she's got multiple podcasts going on. And it was just good to like say that in front of people and be the voice. So I don't see it as a curse anymore. I see it as like a major, major two thumbs up to be Indigenous. Oh,
I'm so proud of you.
I know I've come so far. Wow, look at me, all grown up.
She's ours. She helps us. I'm always looking for extra things to do, though, I'm sure. One of the privileges that I have is having a name that means something, an Indigenous name.
You do, because there are many of us who don't have that.
Yeah, and I feel like I have a real identity. I don't know how, I mean, that sounds really bad for other people, but it feels like I have, like, I don't have to search. I feel like it's a privilege to have grown up around my grandparents and elders in the community, really great older women who have passed now, who really were doing something traditional when they were like, Suta, you're good at this. You should be this. And it gave me a sense of pride in that they were taking out elements of my behavior and giving me a life purpose. And I never had to, there was so many things. This is what it's like to self-actualize as a child, I think, because this is what we go into in cultural humility versus cultural competency and identity work and culture, is that Abraham Maslow says that you self-actualize after you have all your basic needs met, all of these things, education, family attained, whatever. And then you self-actualize as a person. For Native people, we flip that upside down and we secured our identities as a child and self-actualized as a child and then pursued a life purpose. And so in that model, there's never any, who am I? What am I doing here? What's going on in this world and where do I fit in? Because I self-actualized when I was little and I was surrounded by that circle of support, I always felt like I have a purpose. This is who I am and I'm strong in it and it provides me strength. And I've always pulled on that when I've, you know, had those occasional depressive states that comes with living in a colonial world.
Hello, Melissa's life. Self-actualization. I can't imagine attaining that as a child. Like that really is a privilege to have grown up like so close to your culture, where I wasn't even aware really of certain things till I got much older. The only real culture I was exposed to, like legitimate Indigenous culture, was going to visit my cousins on the res and like watching my aunt skin a deer and like get it all ready and like other animals and game. That was pretty much it. And the occasional powwow club here and there in the, you know, the urban environment. And then when I got older is when I really like saw the Indigenous community out there, when I got into radio and like realized there was this huge, vast web of like communities who were interconnected by radio. And I really finally saw the culture. So it's taken me just a little bit. But now I'm experiencing the privileges of that as an adult, which is really, really cool. Wow. What a perspective to have. In the beginning of the podcast, I thought it was just like INAC privileges, but now it's like going through the cultural humility framework. Like you said, you really have to go through each part of your life. And then you realize, wow, I'm a way more privileged and way more stronger than I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The me holding the life spas is like carrying on my grandpa's work. He really wanted to do free culture camps for community members who couldn't afford spiritual medicinal services. And me doing the life spas is almost the exact same thing of trying to make sure that these foster girls and these young Indigenous girls that participate in that feel like they have a place and they don't feel obligated to pay for it when I know that they can't. And that we're giving them, the coolest part is that they get an auntie and a grandma as camp counselors. So really iconic Shiro type women from their own communities that I seek out, ask and pay to be involved, and then just help them bring their own people back into their communities. And then hopefully instill some of that identity, that's land-based strength and identity, so that when they're met with their hard times in life, that they have some resilience to pull off of. That's not, you know, I don't think we can be completely resilient on our own. It takes community or culture, and then going to like these hybrid cultures of urban natives for you, 60 scoop family natives, and then how you all lived and tried to implement parts of your culture, because I know your mom worked for a native health thing. And so really cool, like native words and symbols. So it was there for you. Like you weren't raised like in Napiguan, we would say, like Napiaki. A white person. So it was there, but there's these hybrid cultures that I think we also self-actualize in, because Missoula is doing a really cool drive on keeping us visible and keeping us present. The Missoula Indian Center here, or All Nations Health Center, as I think is what they're called. And they do different campaigns like Boys with Braids or bringing Auntie Beatrice in so that we can heal with a little bit of comedy and laughter and just creating that sense of community, even though we're technically like off the reservation.
That's great. I wish I had more access to those types of programs when I was growing up. But I did have a couple of people or community, I guess, organizations. I remember this one white lady used to come pick me up every like Sunday or maybe every second Sunday. And she would take me to the library and she would let me read any books I wanted. And then we would go into a theater with just me and her and watch Curious George. So that made me feel really special as a kid, as part of like, you know, the low income living in the projects. These programs would come in from really nice people and funders to like take select kids who wanted to do that and like go on this little program and be shown a library by themselves. Stuff
That's
like that.
That's amazing. Where are those funders at? We Indigenous Vision needs, right? So that we can do that for our own community.
You know, being a poor little kid, every once in a while, some program would come scoop a bunch of us up and like do something really special. Like one time we went on an airplane. I don't think we ever left the tarmac though, but they pretended like they did and they drove around. And then Santa came on and said that he had landed on the roof and that he had, you know, from the North Pole, and he gave us all a present. And that was like a huge deal when you're little, right?
So cute.
They made like the fake wind sound on the intercom. We're like, Santa has so just cute. Boarded. He's on top of the plane. And we were like, ah. And then all of a sudden Santa came out of the cockpit and we were like, holy smoke, Santa's here. So there's like really fun, weird programs like that that I got used to. But it would have been like better, I think, if it was culturally Indigenous. So I think what you're doing with the Life Spa is so incredible. Like those girls, especially like even the one I went to, what was it, 2019 or was it 2018? 19. The one in Arizona at Sholo.
No, it was 18. Oh my
Isn't
God.
That crazy? 18?
Yes.
Like Faye is one of our youth. Yeah. Faye is one of our youth coordinators now from that like spa. Like I think we made a really big impact on all of them.
I hope so. I hope by exposing them to all the amazing, awesome aunties and grandmas that they're, it shows them that you can be any kind of Indigenous woman that you want to be, and you can be successful doing that. And
especially in the creative realm, because that's where the majority of our talents lie, especially as Indigenous people. Like there's so much creativity, and a lot of people are hung up on like this big corporate world they have to chase. And it's like, guess what? You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. I have another privilege. This is kind of my melanin. Yes. It keeps me young, helps me look beautiful. I don't have that many fine lines and wrinkles. I'm aging like a fine wine.
I know. You know what? There are people who are almost 10 years younger than me who have gray hair. And I'm like, what is up with their DNA?
Yeah, I haven't, you know, knock on wood, but I still have, I'm still looking for that one strand. I want a clear, like a bright white platinum streak through my bangs, just like my grandma had. Super cute. I can play with that, but I'm still waiting for that one gray hair, and I'm 38 years old. And I was looking through creams and moisturizers and stuff like that. And I put in my age, and they put in creams for like heavy wrinkles and some like heavier duty, like skin issues than what I had. And I'm just at the point where I'm starting to see some sun splotches from being out my time in Arizona, where I was like a tanning goddess, golden goddess.
I was tanning the other day. I don't mean to rub it in, but I was tanning at the pool the other day because I like to keep my skin brown. I always tell people like I like being brown, and I like to keep it like nice and toasty because it's, in my opinion, striking to see a beautiful woman walking by with brown skin. I think it is.
It is. And we've been trained for so long to be ashamed of our brown skin. My grandmother was white passing, especially in the wintertime here in the north where we get really pasty. I think she just maintained that year round and was white passing. And in her era, that was much safer. But that makes me angry, and it makes me want to be like big and brown and beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, totally right.
But it's a privilege. I'm aging slow, and I feel like I look at old pictures and it shows like really weathered old grandmas, like wind weathered, sun weathered. And I think the lifestyle of being inside an office and in a house is just preserving
me. It's going to be kind of hot for a long time. So just accept that, everybody, once you see our bios and pictures.
Just beautifully
look like
brown.
That for a long time. That is a great privilege. That is also a very great privilege. And our hair is beautiful too.
Yes, yes. I love your hair. We always talk about how people are like, dreads are cultural appropriation. And I'm like, whoa. Indigenous people all around the world had dreads. We have all kinds of stories of spider grandmas. And when I saw you and your hair, first I was like, ooh, check out her makeup. Ooh, check out her tattoos. Oh my goodness, she's like a spider grandma.
Because spider grandma in the making.
Yes, yes. And I just love it. Ooh, earth knowledge. We know quite a few medicinal plants before they're made into Tylenol and aspirin, like willows. So earth knowledge, that's definite privilege.
And the water connections that we have are so special.
Ooh, yes, dream culture. And so like my water connection was through my dream culture. And I think my indigenous privilege in being part of dream culture is that my family has always said, you know, do you have any dreams last night? And then we talk about my dreams and what they could mean and what to be careful for, or what to look forward to. And we were just so guided by dreams. And it's just, that is another identity and purpose thing. I never feel like I have, like I'm lost.
Same. And I don't feel like I'm that far sometimes to my family because of the other realms that we can interact in. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. So the spiritual realm and our ideas, our indigenous ideas and concepts of time and space. And so if you really think about that, and that's what's helped me get through the death of a lot of family members, really close family members, is that I really step back and yes, it hurts me. It pulls my heart out that they're not right here. I can't text them. I can't say what's up, and they can't say right on, all good, all, you know, what brothers and sisters say. But when I really sit back and think about it, they are part of me. And as long as I'm living and alive, then they can actually live through me because their spirit is around me and also experiencing my experiences when they check on me or things like that. And so it's never, you know, people joke like this, oh, Native people don't have goodbye in our language. And so when people have passed in my family, I've always left it on a see you later. I've never went down to the funeral to say goodbye, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree. We have like this healthy way of grieving, because at the end of the day, we're all going to be together again in some form or another. If you accept those forms, your heart is not really that shattered, but you know, you miss the physical, of course. So yeah, I also see that as a privilege. My perspective on death is completely different than a lot of other people that I meet.
I think it could be, without explanation, I can be probably viewed as callous, maybe, but I'm processing. And then there are some deaths, like recent deaths, where I feel like I was so busy and it just got wrapped up and jumbled in all of these meetings. And I didn't take the time out to really sit down and say, oh, so-and-so has passed and started this other journey. And so I feel like I could be in denial about some things, you know, nothing's, it's not perfect. It's not a perfect system or cycle, but it does help you when you're more aware of how time and space works in an indigenous way, so that you don't ever feel like without or at loss. And there's only small moments of sacrifice.
The indigenous privilege right here.